some further discussion with the treasurer's organization or some other things could come forward that your counsel or whatever. Thank God I'm not on it, Madam Treasurer. But you could come back with some kind of proposal that would be a little less of concern to legal aid.
And what I think Mr. Joseph's letter to the board yesterday suggested was proposed a task force, a study group, that says, is this the best way to make this selection as to who provides these services? And there ought to be a lot of different participants in that process, including the judges.
We're hearing there actually is an ongoing group already.
But I think the issue here is
created by statute. Yeah.
This juncture is time to exercise the option so that group can weigh in.
Okay. Let's
thank you,
Mr. Tyler. Well, these are the folks that are. It's hard to figure out what we're for and what we're against here. All of those who preceded us want to see the contract continued for an additional
two years,
not the 6 months on the 21 of them. And Mr. Tyler, you are here on this matter. And
I am, sir.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Ralph Tyler, representing the law offices of Darlene Wakefield. Ms. Wakefield, just by way of background, has been doing this work under contracts with the state for many years, has done it exceptionally well in many jurisdictions. The matter before the board today, the proper matter before the board, is whether the contracts, which are not in dispute, should be awarded, while the contracts in dispute would not be awarded, and the arguments that have been made and any others would get aired out and resolved at the Board of Contract Appeals. The Department of Human Resources here has initiated a process with an RFP which set forth factors, both technical and financial. Proposals were submitted, proposals were evaluated, recommended awards in the jurisdictions in which there are bid protests and then appeals. There's been no request to have those contracts approved. We are confident of the outcome there, but what simply should not occur is what is being requested, which is at the end of the process, change the rules. There was a set of rules put in place to conduct this procurement, and now people who didn't do as well in the process as they would have liked, apparently, seek to change the rules. And as to technical competence, again, Ms. Wakefield and her firm, just by way of example, have been doing this work for more than 20 years, providing legal representation of exceptional quality to children. She has the human resources. She has the technical infrastructure to do so. It is not the case, as it was suggested in the letter yesterday and has been suggested this morning, that the department is recommending the lowest bidder. That's the facts of the documents before the board clearly show that that is not true. What is true is that the technical rankings as between legal aid and my client, for example, were close, but there was a wide disparity in price. Just by way of example, in Montgomery County, legal aid was ranked first technically, and my client was ranked second technically. The price differential between the two was 52%. 52% higher on legal aid's price than my client's. Prince George's County, the price differential was 55%. So the question really is whether the procurement process, which was put in place under rules with which my client and others complied, with which legal aid disagreed with certain aspects of it in advance, as you've heard, filed protests, those got resolved, and now they've protested the outcome, that process should run its course, rather than the request now being made, which is to short-circuit the process and cut it off and just to award another 2 years. We would ask the board not to do that, to extend the contracts as the Department of Human Resources requests, not to award the contracts in the jurisdictions under protest, and to let those matters be resolved at the Board of Contract Appeals. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler. Pamela Smith, National Organization of Legal Service Workers.
Good afternoon, Governor O'Malley, Comptroller Franchot, and Treasurer Kopp. My name is Pam Smith. I'm the Financial Secretary Treasurer of the National Organization of Legal Services. We're an amalgamated local of UAW 2320, and we represent over 4,000 members in legal and human services programs around the country, including over 130 UAW members at Legal Aid in Maryland. 40 of those members, some of whom you've heard from today, work directly with the CINA program at Legal Aid and will be impacted by a change in the CINA award. These are workers who know these children, know their lives, know their stories, and have been representing them. I'm joined today by Jim Rogers from the UAW Region 8, Isaac Conver, president of MD Law, the local unit at Legal Aid, and many of our members and friends who have come out today to support us in this issue. We are concerned about the procurement process that generated both items that are being discussed today, and we ask you to appoint a task force to evaluate the process to ensure that Maryland's most vulnerable children receive the highest quality legal representation. We would join in Legal Aid's request to extend the two-year option on the contract to allow the state time to investigate this procurement process. My perspective on this issue is first formed by the fact that I have worked with at-risk youth for most of my life, including tutoring and mentoring in schools, suicide and crisis counseling, foster care case management at DSS, psychosocial assessments at the Public Defender's Office, and volunteering with anti-human trafficking organizations. I'm also a former CINA attorney at Legal Aid in Maryland. Children in Maryland have a statutory right to counsel in child abuse and neglect cases. The Department of Human Resources oversees that procurement process to purchase legal representation for children in foster care. DHR awarded the CINA contracts to various providers based on a procurement process that awards equal weight to quality of representation and to cost. In the current bidding cycle, Legal Aid was awarded the highest quality scores in Anne Arundel, Baltimore, Hartford, Montgomery, and Prince George's counties, as well as in Baltimore City. However, DHR's procurement process awarded the CINA contracts to lower-cost, for-profit, non-union entities in all those counties and significantly reduced Legal Aid's representation in Baltimore City. Legal Aid has provided uncompromising and zealous advocacy for children for over three decades. DHR's procurement process decisions threatened to silence the most experienced, most competent, and most formidable voice for children in Maryland. It is a disservice to think of representation of a child in the same way that you think of representing an adult. The ability to represent a child well, particularly a child who has been abused and neglected, rests largely on an attorney's ability to develop a trusting relationship with that child. Earning the trust of a child who has been repeatedly let down by adults in their lives takes time. Getting a child to open up about how she received burns that put her in children's hospital, or how his mother forced him to have sex with his siblings, or about ritualistic abuse they endured, requires trust. Legal Aid attorneys, and you've heard it here today, take the time and expend the patient's energy and compassion to earn that trust. Legal Aid attorneys are able to advocate effectively for clients in court because they are the children's champions in all aspects of their lives. They intervene to make sure that children are getting all the health, therapeutic, and educational services they need. They are more than just attorneys. They are confidants and role models. Often the child's attorney is the one stable adult in that child's life. The investment of time it takes to earn a child's trust does cost money. However, the failure to invest in the lives of these children now has costs and consequences that go beyond money. In these cases, the court is determining what is in the best interest of the child in the state's care. The decisions the court makes based on the information has consequences in the life of the child and in our communities. It can make the difference between whether a child thrives or slips through the cracks. We are all responsible for these children, and our failures can result in further child abuse, school violence, gang activity, and human trafficking. I attended a meeting just this week on the prevention of violence in our communities. Jean Allert, the executive director of the Samaritan Women in Baltimore, also attended that meeting. The Samaritan Women is an anti-human trafficking group in Baltimore that does outreach with victims of human trafficking. During that meeting, Jean said that in 90% of the cases she sees in her organization, both the victims and the perpetrators were victims of sexual abuse as children. From being familiar with anti-human trafficking work, I wasn't surprised by the statistic about the victims of human trafficking. But the statistic about the perpetrators of human trafficking should scare the hell out of all of us. Kids who do not receive the appropriate interventions and services now will cost us a lot more money later. Children get the supportive services and interventions they need through zealous advocacy by their counsel, the kind of advocacy you've heard about today that they receive from their attorneys at Legal Aid. We would ask you to exercise the 2-year option contract that DHR has already negotiated with CINA service providers and appoint a task force to examine the CINA procurement process during the 2-year option. However, if the board chooses to go forward with the 6-month extension presented today by the department, we would agree with that to allow our attorneys the opportunity to continue to represent their clients, but we would also ask that you use that time to appoint the task force to examine the procurement process to eliminate harm to children created by the current process. There are several things that we would want that task force to be charged with. We'd like them to be charged with examining ways to ensure that children receive the highest quality legal representation, including reevaluation of the weight given to quality versus cost of representation, as well as possible alternatives to the current procurement process. Examining ways to eliminate the disruption to children in the event of any change in future providers. A child should not have to start again with a new attorney because a procurement process changed the contract award. The courts, which are tasked with determining the best interest of the child, should also be determining when and if it's appropriate to change legal representation. Examining the appropriateness of DHR overseeing the procurement process. DHR is the parent agency for all county departments of social services. These departments are opposing parties to child's counsel in CINA cases. CINA attorneys file appeals and challenge the actions of local departments of social services and, by extension, DHR. There is an inherent conflict of interest in a system of procurement that allows DHR to oversee the procurement process for services of an opposing counsel. I thank you very much for your time. I know it's been a long day. We all have an interest in ensuring that Maryland's children receive the highest quality legal representation. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I think we're more properly listening to Ms. Smith on the legal aid side of
I've made that correction.
Contract procurement, the sheet here. Michael Lentz, Franklin Law Group.
Good afternoon, Governor. I will try to be brief, and given that I'm now standing, you are virtually assured that I will be. I think it's important, as we hear all of the remarks that we've heard on this issue today, that we keep in mind that, as Mr. Tyler said, what you're being asked to do now is change the rules now that the game is over, or nearly. Legal Aid has filed 4 protests here. 4 have been denied. One was granted in part, and then they refiled on other bases. There is an appeal pending before the Board of Contract Appeals. Other appeals have been, I won't say threatened, I think mentioned is the better word. And there is a process by which the person that this board charged with the determination of making, charged with determining who the appropriate best offeror would be, i.e. the procurement officer, he rendered a decision. His decision has been challenged, and that process is underway. And perhaps Legal Aid will prevail at the BCA, and perhaps the agency will prevail. But there's a process here, and you're now being asked to short-circuit it, throw the process out the window, abandon the decision that was made by the procurement officer, and essentially take the case away from, for lack of a better term, the Board of Contract Appeals. In essence, you're sort of being asked to function as a court of special appeals. It doesn't really exist yet, but we're trying to create one, apparently. I think we need to let the process run its course. I think that it's very important that the board consider, and these are the last remarks I'll make before, with the board's indulgence yielding to my client, Stephanie Franklin, I think it's important that the board consider what you're being asked to believe is that you're being asked to choose price over quality, and that's not the case. Ms. Franklin and the other awardees are, in fact, as qualified to do this work as is Legal Aid. I certainly don't intend any disrespect to Legal Aid at all. Frankly, I believe that all of the people who do this work are, as far as lawyers go, heroes. Because I know I couldn't do that work on a daily basis, but they do it every day. And I think it's very important to remember that the procurement officer decided not that we were picking somebody worse because they were cheaper, but in fact that we were picking someone as good or better who happened to be cheaper. And I believe Ms. Franklin was in both of the jurisdictions in which she bid. She was either number one or number two in the technical rank and substantially cheaper than all of the other bidders. So it's not a case where we're saying that the board and the DHR ought to choose the cheaper option that's going to deliver worse care for these kids in the legal system. What we're saying is we should save money in delivering the same or better care. And I'll let, because I can't speak nearly as well as she could to her qualifications to do this job, I'll let Ms. Franklin speak briefly. I know it's been a long day. I assure you that Ms. Franklin is an experienced trial lawyer who understands the value of brevity, so I'll yield to her but encourage her to observe brevity.
Good afternoon, Governor. Good afternoon, Madam Treasurer and Mr. Comptroller. Thank you for your time. I know it's been a long day, but I really feel the need to have to speak to you today about a number of issues that were brought before you, specifically with respect to getting lawyers for cheap. I can speak for myself, being the CEO of the Franklin Law Group, that I have been working in child welfare since 1999. Specifically, I have worked for 5 years for my competitor, Ms. Darlene Wakefield, where she specializes, her firm, in center practice, an NTPR practice across the state. I was also hired to direct the Family Recovery Program, which was the first compact under the Maryland Opportunity Compact. In 2004, I was that first director. It is the largest family dependency drug court in the state of Maryland, located in Baltimore City Juvenile Court. At that point, I left as I was awarded a contract presently under Mecca's Place to represent children in Center and TPR matters. With respect to that, I have been, as a firm, doing this under this procurement since 2007. However, my expertise and knowledge ranges back to 1999. I want to be clear with this panel, with everyone in this room, I am not a novice. I clearly know what I am doing. Having said that, when I did oversee the Family Recovery Program, I was one of a few persons who oversaw a $2.5 million annual budget. So having said that, Legal Aid would like to have everyone in this room believe that they are the only ones qualified to do this work, but I beg to differ. Not only am I qualified to do this work, but there are other awardees who were successfully awarded these contracts, the new contracts that are not before the board today, are also qualified to do so. The stories that Legal Aid has shared with you about their representation is not different to the representation that my firm and that my individuals who work for me, my staff attorneys, do. Holistic representation, social justice, that is the focus of my firm. I am very clear about that. We don't work 9 to 5. We don't work Monday through Friday. We work 7 days a week. And there's a policy in my office that we are mandated to see children in their placement. We don't go during school hours unless there's an exception, because we don't want to interrupt, number one, the academic regimen of the children that we serve. Number two, we find that most children don't want to be seen by their lawyer in school. So what does that mean? When we have a long, hard day in court, and I don't know if any of you here have been in juvenile court, they can be long days. They're traumatic, they're emotional, and they're turbulent. We leave there after court is concluded, maybe trying several trials that day, to see our children all over the state. Right now, we are in multiple jurisdictions. I was ranked number one in Baltimore, and number one in Baltimore City and Baltimore County. I sit as Child Counsel Representative for the State of Maryland on the Legislative Subcommittee on Child Abuse and Neglect with the Foster Care Court Improvement Project. I also sit on the Program and Outreach Committee for the Foster Care Court Improvement Project with the State of Maryland. I am published on several issues pertaining to child welfare internationally, nationally, specifically as it relates to the intersection of child welfare and criminal justice. My firm has provided several community programming for the children that we serve. We have provided mock trials for center children that we represent, where they are the attorneys who represent the department, the children, as well as the parents, and they have also been the judges of those competitions. We have not used other monies to do that. This is money that I fundraised personally and had people subsidize. We also provided a family kinship workshop for grandparents and other kinship care providers to educate them not only about the juvenile court process and how to navigate it, but the Department of Social Services process. We also included in that forum information from experts regarding out-of-school and out-of-home behavioral problems that children in foster care face, with licensed social workers who could address clinical issues that these providers had facing them. We also provided a special education representative at that forum to help them navigate the special education system and explain certain issues to these parents, quote-unquote, the caregivers, where this process is very complex, convoluted, and overdone. I say that to you to say I can sit up here and tell you many stories about the children that I represent, and I'm going to tell you one. I represent a child. She's been in care since 2007. She is now 18 and a half years of age. She's been committed to the local Department of Social Services. She has several mental health diagnoses. One is schizoid affective disorder. One is oppositional defiant disorder. One is bipolar disorder and depression. My child has been in multiple placements. Since she's been in care, she's been in 10 placements. Her most recent placement was at the Good Shepherd Services Center. That center is a residential treatment facility for children with high and deep emotional and psychological needs. She was placed there in December of 2012. While being there, she caught an adult criminal charge. So she takes several psychotropic medications.
Did you say
she
caught?
Caught. She was charged.
She
with
caught one.
Assault.
Caught one.
Criminal charge.
That's a good way to describe a criminal charge.
Oh, an assault charge?
No, caught.
I said caught, but I will tell you that she was charged with assault. So having said that, what do we do as center attorneys? We have kids that traverse many systems. The criminal justice system, the juvenile justice system, mental health systems, special education, issues within the educational system. This young woman, I have been charged with her life. I don't just represent her in center court. I represent all of the other issues that bring her before the juvenile court. So having said that, I have seen this child on average since She's been placed at the residential treatment facility at least 3 times a month at no extra charge, because it's not about the money. And we like to make you think that it's all about the money, but some of us are called to do this work. And when we're called to do this work, we'll do it regardless of price. So the thought that you can charge 50% or more higher price to deliver a service that if you're called to do, you'll do it regardless of what the income level is important to note. So having said that, not only did I see this young woman several times, I showed with her in criminal court. I'm in constant contact with her clinical therapist and other outside support systems that impact her life. That's just one child. And the myriad of the over 3,300 children that my firm has represented since we started doing this work. So I'm saying this to you, that holistic advocacy and representation is not unique to legal aid. It is something that the Franklin Law Group does. It is something that we will continue to do with an eye and a focus on social justice, because it is about the human need. And if you can do that same job and save the state money at the same time, I don't need to gouge you, state, to do my work. I can fundraise from other sources to support the work that I do. I can do that in kind donations. I can do that several ways. So I am saying to you today that this panel should consider shortening that six-month time period, that two-year time period to 6 months. We don't need 2 years to determine whether or not we need to get this interim task force and all of those things. It's not needed. The people doing the work now are the people who should continue to do the work. We're doing it. We were awarded these new contracts, or at least were notified that we were going to be awarded them, and now they're being taken from under us. This was a fair process. It was a competitive process. And it was a process that if you were not the successful bidder, you can't come and cry and want to change the rules, pull the awards out from under everyone who worked very hard to do so. This is sending a wrong message if we extend these contracts to 2 years. A very wrong message, because this is what we're seeing. We see that legal aid has done the work for 30 years. This is what they said. And we see legal aid as this big nonprofit entity, and we are these for-profit entities that are just in it for the money. Legal aid, I believe that I heard, indicated that they get pro bono legal services. We don't get pro bono legal services. Legal aid is a corporate giant that works in the nonprofit sector. And it is unfair to allow them to come in and circumvent a process that was fair, that was accurate, and that was reasonable from smaller providers such as myself and my other colleagues who are doing this work well, and will continue to do this work well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Melissa Rock.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard. My name is Melissa Rock. I am the Child Welfare Director at Advocates for Children and Youth. Our mission at ACY is to promote public policies and investments so that all of Maryland's children are safe, healthy, educated, and secure in their families and communities. I am here to support the option of exercising the remaining two-year option for the current providers of children's attorneys. Before coming to Advocates for Children and Youth, I represented children in Child in Need of Assistance and Termination of Parental Rights cases for the Legal Aid Bureau for 8 years. And I was at Legal Aid the last time the contract for children's attorneys switched over. And we took over a lot of cases for some of the providers that now are going to be representing an increased number of children across the state. And one example of a case I got from another provider was a young man who had had an open case for 6 years, and he was placed in a residential psychiatric facility. And when I met with him to explain to him what my role was as his lawyer and asked him where he wanted to live, he had no idea that he could even try to live with a family. There was a real shift in the contract process this go-round where the technical piece was not weighed more highly than the financial piece. And as has been stated, we're talking about the most vulnerable members of our society, and it is extremely important that we, the adults, do what we can to make sure that they are receiving the absolute best possible service. As you've heard, the representation of children goes beyond the court hearings, and you heard a number of instances where Ms. Petkosek has been involved in the appellate process, which is a piece of the contract. I know Treasurer Cope was asking whether that is in the contract, these other pieces of representation, and it is in the contract. However, a number of the providers who were providing services previously and will continue to be providing services don't handle appeals for the children. So going forward, a lot of the children who have been represented in appeals by the Legal Aid Bureau won't receive that representation. I do want to commend the Department of Human Resources because I did meet with them and share some of these concerns, and they are looking at creating a more robust system of evaluation for the children's attorneys. However, I do think it's important, as has been recommended, to look at the entire procurement process and to exercise this 2-year option of extension so that we can make sure that we are doing what's best for Maryland's children. Maryland is extremely progressive, and we are a real leader in the country in terms of the rules we have for representing children and the way we handle cases in our child welfare system. And this is not the direction we should be going, where we're valuing the financial piece as highly as the technical piece. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other persons to be heard?
Good afternoon, Honorable Board. My name is Yolanda Saunier. I'm with Randall and Saunier LLC. My law partner, Kendra Randall Jolivet, is here as well. We represent children in Baltimore City. We do an excellent job. We do everything that everyone that you have heard that have spoken today, we do. We've seen clients in California, Louisiana, Florida. I mean, we've done it all. We represent our clients in appeals. We do not file a notice of appeal and not represent our children. I actually stand here in support of Legal Aid's recommendation of accepting the second option period. I will say something that has not been said to this board yet. The one thing that is different about this contract, we have had a contract since 2001. What's different here is the DHR does not recognize and does not seem to be concerned about the continuity of representation or the relationship that the attorneys have with the children. I have some clients I've represented for 15 years, and the department at this point wants to transfer those cases to other providers. So if you have heard stories from Mr. Joseph, from Ms. Franklin, about the relationship and everything that they have done for those clients, and then if they had to transfer those cases to someone else, what a travesty. The children, sometimes we are the most constant thing in the children's life. And then to take that, and that is the one thing that has not been done in the past. In the past, when contracts are awarded, the providers who were representing the children will be able to continue to represent those children. So at this point, that is not what the department is seeking to do. And they are once again seeking to traumatize the children who are, you know, now the one constant they've had. They've now had their families taken away from them. They've had their neighborhoods, some of them, taken away from them. And now they're going to have the one constant, which are their attorneys, taken from them. So I would say, you know, standing here, you know, this is not an area that you work in to get rich. It's not. You do it because you want to do it, because you have a passion to do it, because you care for children. So, you know, there was no justification in Baltimore City from going from 7 providers to 4 providers. You have 7 organizations, law firms that provide representation to children. They have relationships with these children. And unilaterally, the state decided we just want four providers. So what happens with those children who have established relationships, you know, 15, 16 years with those organizations, and then they're gone the next day? We're looking at it as it's a piece of paper and not a child. So I would say, and then if you just look also at the documents in front of you, it was not given equal weight as far as the technical and the financial. If you look and, you know, there's one is one and one is three, you do an average, that comes two. I mean, if you just look at it, it does not make sense. The system was flawed in the way that it was done. But I just want to point out the one difference here is that the continuity of representation has been ignored by the department. And we ask that this board recognize that it is important to continue that continuity of representation and to actually exercise that 2-year, have the task force decide what's important and what is needed to continue to have those children be represented. And, you know, everyone that stands here has relationships with their clients. And the relationships we have with our clients, you know, things that we have done have been above and beyond and have started a nonprofit, so we would not have to come to the state for certain funds to make sure that children are getting what they need when they are in foster care. So we are in support of that 2-year option period. Thank you.
Is this just a tag? Is there any end to this? Everybody just wants to be heard?
Actually, it's something that's not redundant because
okay.
I'm not going to repeat
it. Here's something. Let me interject just 1 second, and then we'll come to you. There's something that's not redundant. Secretary Dallas, I have a tremendous amount of respect for your passion and your commitment and really appreciate the heart you have and the care that you've brought to that job, which, quite frankly, is one of the toughest in state government. What you've done on healing families, what you've done to reduce the number of children being put into foster care is really admirable, as is the great service that each of you has testified that you do. I'm so glad that each of you is proud of what you do for our most vulnerable kids, and I thank you for that. And Secretary Dallas, I also thank you.
That actually does touch exactly on what I wanted to mention. My name is Chris Robinson. I own Children's Legal Services of Baltimore. It was founded in 1994 specifically for these contracts, just to do SIN and TPO work, and just in the city. I was ranked 3rd technically and 6th on price, so I was not the cheapest by far, so it was not done by price. However, no one's mentioned what would happen if you don't take the 6-month extension and if we do go 2 years in. The city has dropped from over 10,000 cases reviewed a year to a little over 4,000. It's about 60% down. And so, of course, there are going to be fewer firms and fewer lawyers doing this. There's no other way to do it. And so the firms asking for the 2-year extension have a larger percentage under the current contract than they would under the new contract. So, for example, I've always represented 1,000 children, but it's done as a percentage. When it was 10,000 cases in the city, I represented about 1,000 children, my firm. Everybody's 60% down. I'm in the 400s now. My staff, of course, has shrunk to do that. If a 2-year extension is continued, I will continue with that 40% rate. I've been holding on to staff, as have others, relying on the new contract. I got 25% of the city next time, 1,000 children, the same number that I've always represented. I've kept staff to be able to do that. With a 2-year extension, I will shrink to myself and one other attorney. It's a wonderful tactic, because then in 2 years after we've studied the whole thing, I have to do a new RFP and say, sure, 2 of us can do 1,000 cases. I'll just hire 5 new people. The experienced people I have won't be able to stay with me. With the 6-month extension, I'm careful with the budget. I can float that. I've kept people on maternity leave on full pay without having to go unpaid. I had a legal aid attorney I hired several years ago who went out with breast cancer, and I was able to keep her on full pay. Those are the types of things I can't do under a 2-year extension. The other firms that are incumbents and have been doing this will shrink. Legal aids, I'm sure, shrunk the same percentage. They'll continue on, but it will set up for the next RFP a situation where they can say, sure, we have the staff to do it.
So a six-month extension, the firms that have geared up or have kept the staff able to do it, if the contract appeal works out unfavorable and we continue with the new contract, we have experienced attorneys ready to go, including resumes from other firms. It's a bit of an incestuous group. We switch around where we work. I was a DSS attorney for a year in 2002. I realized I could do a better job and more effective representation of children than I could the state. I teach at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. One of my staff attorneys occasionally teaches an oral advocacy class at the law school at the University of Maryland. These are the people we want working and representing the children, very qualified, and we're ready to go under the new contract. Doing a six-month bump will allow us to continue that, have caseloads very, very low, get ready for the new contract, and be ready to go. A two-year extension will absolutely not. And
so the overall caseload for Senate is way down.
In the city, yes, partially due to the very good benefits of working with the family ahead of time, not bringing them to court. So we're dealing with a little over 4,000 children.
Reduction from 6 or 7 years ago.
Yes, about 60% from 6 or 7 years ago. So all the firms have shrunk tremendously. And then the question is, if we go for another 2 years under the current contract, which was done when there were 10,000 cases to divvy up, and I don't mean to sound crass about it. These are very serious cases. But, I mean, when we're looking at the business side of things, we have to look at it that way. When there were 10,000 cases to divvy up, we had 7 providers. That's how we did the contract. We don't have that anymore. So not only they never took the two-year extension, but they extended it by a year and a half anyway. So we almost had that two-year extension. So we've been floating along under almost 7 years under a contract that was written for more children than we had in the city, which is why 7 firms don't work. And if we're going to continue it, everybody except legal aid is going to shrink by so much with the experienced attorneys and then have to come in 2 years and say, oh, we'll hire people out of law school. The experienced attorneys aren't going to stay.
And tell us again why you think the caseload is down.
Significant work with DHR, especially with Ms. McGrath, in terms of servicing families ahead of time so they don't have to come into court. The petition is down.
The place matters efforts. Yeah.
All of the family preservation work so that cases aren't brought in under the emergency docket to court. So it used to be that on a day in the city, the emergency docket would have 15 or 16 children. And now it has maybe 5. And most of them are repeats. They're things that failed.
I've read that in the Baltimore Sun. Have you, Mike? Might be a good story. It might be worth it. People might actually be interested that their state government actually works and can achieve better results, especially for vulnerable children, not just the sand.
So I would ask the panel to just consider the actual ramifications and say, oh, you know, it's a two-year contract extension. It is. But the contract wasn't written for what we have now. It's incumbents. We've got people who are doing it for 20 years. I've one attorney who was actually doing this for about 30 years. She left to do some ACLU work and came back.
That's
so it's the same thing that everyone else has said. But there will be a significant impact in the quality if we do 2 more years under the current contract versus a 6-month.
Thank you. Who's next? Yes? Somebody else wanted to speak? No? Yes? No? Okay.
So it's before the Board of Contract Appeals now, under the present procurements, this new type waiting or procurement, right?
The issue about the 50-50 that folks have already talked about, that has already been dealt with by the Board of Contract Appeals. That was protested when the RFP was released by legal aid that went to the Board of Contract Appeals, and that case was dismissed by the Board of Contract Appeals. The protest from legal aid is actually about different matters than the 50-50 matter. They're protesting other issues than that. That RFP methodology has already been affirmed and upheld by the State Contract Board of Appeals.
And do we have any idea how long this appeal will last?
I guess it's hard to tell, but no. I've been told that six months is a reasonable time frame to allow.
I mean, gave us 6 months. I wondered if that was Secretary skeptical. Yeah.
I mean, I think they said 6 months, but I think what we've done oftentimes is the 6 months, if no decision was made, we came back to the board.
Yeah. No, I understand that. Sure. It's just it's six is a round number. That's where we...
The estimate I heard was 3 to 6 months from our procurement folks, so we said 6 months on the long side to be safe, and, I think the intent is to allow the appeal to run its course, or the protest to run its course.
want.
Well, I can tell you very clearly from my experience with the Board of Contract Appeals and the situation you described, they don't even need 6 months. You can just do it because it's already been determined. It's already been determined. Let me just give you my insight after 7 years in dealing with $60 billion in contracts. It's a done deal. If we let this go, it's over.
The Board of Contract Appeals takes forever.
No, I'm just saying that this is a process set up for big for-profit companies. I appreciate procurement, but you're putting a square peg in a round hole here, and I just really think that it needs to be take a step back, examine what the Secretary has done, come back with an improved process, and, this idea that there's some kind of holistic review of what has been done, that will happen. It just isn't going to happen. And I feel badly for legal aid. I think it's a poor treatment from day one when this thing was put out for requests for whatever it is.
IFP.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not broke, you know, take care that you're not doing, and I appreciate what the governor said. I'm sure your intent is great. But this process, this procurement process that we have right now, it's just not suited to this situation. And it's particularly not suited now that it's way down the road, because I can pretty much, I'll give you $1,000 if you lose any of those appeals. You're not going to. You're going to win every single one of them. And the damage will be done. So, I don't know. It doesn't seem like the board is so inclined. But I would suggest we go to the 2-year review on everything and ask you to come back with some kind of recommendation that would protect, at a minimum, what we have, deal with this continuity of representation and other issues that have been brought up. And let's...
What about that continuity of representation?
Continuity of representation is being handled exactly the same way it has in every RFP, including the ones that Legal Aid has won. There's no change to the process right now. In fact, it's actually a more thorough review than has been done in the past.
Does everybody have to change lawyers?
No, and everyone doesn't have to change lawyers. We are going through each case that's awarded on a case-by-case basis, and we are looking at the individual characteristics of that case. You can't blanketly say no cases can be transferred, just like you can't say every case can be transferred. So all the providers know how this works. There is, you know, you look at things, whether there's a hearing that's scheduled anytime soon, whether the child is going to age out. In fact, Legal Aid themselves, when they bid on this contract, they bid, if they had gotten everything they were awarded, they would have 2,000 cases transferred from other attorneys, the ones who came here, to them. They bid with the intent knowing that that would occur. These happen. These decisions are made on a case-by-case basis, and they're always made in the best interest of the child. So a lot of folks have said a lot of things here today, most of which only lack the merit of being true. We are going through a process that we go through all the time. This is a process we've gone in the past. Legal Aid has benefited from it. And I think their concerns about the structure of the RFP, I think, have a lot more to do with the result than they do with the structure of the RFP. And I think
there's far less work.
The numbers, if you want to know the numbers, the reason why there are fewer vendors, there will be fewer providers here, is we're down 41% in the number of kids in care. Over the last 5 years, there has been a huge change in the way we do business. We have an infrastructure that is built for 10,000 kids. We're now down to 6,100.
An illegal infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, there's been changes, and you know, we were here a little while ago. We were reducing the number of group homes we have. Right. There's no way that you can go from 10,000 kids in care down to 6,100 kids in care and still have the same infrastructure.
Well, we've also cut the number of kids murdered in the state in half, and also greatly reduced the number of kids being taken out of there.
There's been no change to the safety of the kids or the number of kids who have been.
Actually, there has been.
Well, it's improved. It's improved. It has not. Yes.
Anyway, we have a motion on the floor. The comptroller's motion is to extend it for 2 years. Is there a second for that? Motion.
I wasn't going to until I heard candidly Mr. Secretary your last comment about people lying. And that, I'm sorry. I think there ought to be at the same time a group perhaps the council that exists now looking at the process. And I really, I guess it's your group, is it?
Yes, sir. I happen to chair the council. And if I can also clarify for the board, that the two items before the board, neither of which serve to actually exercise a two-year option.
Right.
So for transactional purposes, it would have to be deferred or...
I would second it, but I don't understand where that leaves us because that's not an option before us. I also am confused because I think if you go to appeal and the comptroller is right and the Board of Contract Appeals, it says that the process was done correctly, and I believe it probably was under the criteria that were set out, but have some concern about the criteria that were set out. That doesn't solve it. Tell me how that solves it.
Madam Treasurer, I think that folks have given the impression that these contracts were awarded to low-cost providers, right? There were, you know, that there was, I think I saw...
I have the numbers here.
Yeah, I know. So what I can tell you is, I mean, it's just not the case, right? I mean, you have all the providers...
I have
all
the numbers here. I see what they are. Unless you're telling me the numbers you gave us are wrong.
No, I understand that. I'm saying to you that at the end of the day, you saw some of the providers that came up here. These are all folks who do this for a living, who are passionate about it. So is Legal Aid passionate about it. There was a procurement. Legal Aid is unhappy with the outcome of that procurement. Right?
That's quite clear.
Just on my motion, if we vote on 7 and 17 and we say we're not going to grant the contracts, we're not going to give a six-month delay, we're just going to say no, doesn't that direct the agency to exercise the option, and it would the current process for both 7 and 17 would continue for the next year and a half or 2 years, whatever the time frame is, whenever it would trigger. I mean, it's just that's – I'm not suggesting – Madam Treasurer, getting in the agency's shoes, I just think we can turn these contract requests down and ask the agency to exercise the option and come back with a more broadly supported solution to this issue. And I go back to my statement. I think this procurement process we're putting on you and your people that are servicing our kids, it's a little bit of a square peg in a round hole. I'm not sure it fits. And so I would change my motion to say on 7 and 17, we vote to reject the request for approval of these contracts, and we ask the agency to exercise the option. And that would then continue, as I understand it, the status quo until period would. So that's the way around it. I agree with you. I think it's not right for us to. But
if there's
at this point, I'm happy to do anything.
If neither one of these agenda items, if it's either deferred, disapproved, or withdrawn by DHR, DHR would then have to come back with a different resolution to keep these services in place. It wouldn't necessarily have to be an option. If there isn't one, there may not be an option left on the original contract. It may be in another form of procurement, be it emergency, but there are other procurement methods they could use to keep the services in place. If the board should choose to take either a disapproval or a deferral, or the agency should withdraw the items. But they would have to come back with a different solution.
I think one thing to point out is the adult cases, which no one has protested or no one's even discussed it, they're out of options, so those need to be awarded.
I was going to say you've got the end of this month.
Right.
Which one are they? Is that 7S? Is that 7S?
I think it's also applicable to
Senate
cases as well as to adult cases. There's no discussion or no protest in regards to the adult cases, but I think what the department has done is said in the instance of the children's cases, they took out those cases that people had objections to. Those have already gone to the Board of Contract Appeals. That's before the board to decide. And they're offering to have an extension of those cases for up to 6 months until that decision is made.
Correct. And
I think, let me just make sure I understand. You were saying that seven, basically.
Item seven.
Is not two. Truly being contested. To get back to the first thing that was said about them being tied together, whatever the term was. You
right. There is no protest
correct.
To item seven.
There's
item
no
seven.
I didn't contest seven. It's just the whole thing is just a mess.
I think it becomes a mess when we change the rules at the end of the procurement process.
Right.
When people who aren't satisfied, who are unhappy with the way it came out. That's what leads to the mess.
The mess, in my opinion, was started by taking this kind of service and putting it through this procurement process from the get-go. That was the problem.
It's been put through a procurement process like this since 1995, I think.
Yeah, well, okay. Let's take a vote and move on.
Can we do something about the adult guardianship part so that people don't lose?
Madam Chair, I implore you to reconsider on it, allow those protests to go forward. I'll be happy to have any conversations that you'd like with legal aid, with anybody, but at the end of the day, in terms of keeping these contracts going and having the process go forward, if we could just award the contracts that have gone through the RFP process and allow those protests to run their course, that I think is what's consistent with the law, that's consistent with what all the providers who responded to the RFP signed up for. And to me, I think the governor's absolutely right, is the mess will be if we do not do that here today.
And the board would have the discretion to separate out the adult representation contracts and approve those awards if they so choose, and separate out the CINA representation on item 7S.
Yeah, and you're saying that, and he's saying something else.
Yes. The secretary is asking that the item be approved as before you in the form that it is.
And at the end of the day, I think.
But you're using the same criteria for 7 and 17 for CINA cases for kids.
For the criteria, as I understand it, right, 17 is the extension,
correct.
Right? Is the extension of the status quo in the 10 jurisdictions.
Because they happen to be
under
contested.
Protest.
Right.
Yes, they're under protest.
But it's the same in 7 for the Senate cases, except they're not being protested.
Yes, they're not being protested.
But the process has been the same.
Right. Well, legal aid will either be successful or not at the Board of Contract Appeals, and they can have that argument there. Right. I mean, that's where their day in court is. I think, as some of the others who spoke here, we had a process. The process was followed. The contracts were awarded, and now folks want to change the rules. I think the folks who won the contracts would have a serious problem with us doing that.
They would. I have no problem with the Adult Protective Services aspect.
Madam Treasurer, I'm truly sorry if I said anything that made you want to change your mind on this. It was not my intention. I was trying to lay out the facts, and if I did anything that made you change your mind or made you want to vote another way, I apologize for that.
Well, I don't want to do it. There were also things. Well. I don't believe when we had an earlier discussion and I came to understand the situation that all the facts, in fact, were presented. I'm not saying there was any intention to mislead or to leave things out, but that, in fact, is the effect of what happened. So I wasn't going to air that here, but I'm telling you that now.
Okay.
I think it is very unfortunate. And I don't understand why you're not protesting the ones at 7. If this is the only way to get adult protective services, then I would support 7.
So there's no objection to any of the Senate things in 7?
Apparently not.
No one has objected to any of the
so we can approve
that
7.
You can approve 7. Objection.
All right. Controller moves.
No.
You're against all of them.
I am against this situation that legal aid, through no fault of its own, has been placed in, and frankly, the other providers. And so I would much prefer a two-year, keep everything as is, services being provided, come back with a better process so that great institutions like this legal aid, and they were strongly supported in the legislature when I was there, and they've done the work of the Lord, and I'm not saying they therefore get a free ride. I'm just saying that there needs to be a procurement process that recognizes what we have and doesn't just put it through the grist of the, you know, of the procurement process and the Board of Contract Appeals. It's not, you know, go and do the task force, come back and give us a better process, but this is not a good situation. And so I would oppose 7, I would oppose 17, and I would strongly urge the Secretary to go back and listen to all the stakeholders again and come back with a better process.
For the adult legal services, are there, the contract expires the before the next board meeting, is that correct?
Correct.
Extend it. Come back. You want an emergency extension for 2 months? I don't know.
But I think what the Secretary has pointed out is that none of the individuals who spoke today testified against Item 7. Item 17 is the item which basically provides for a six-month extension. I think what the people who spoke here today spoke to the fact that they thought that the extension should be extended for 2 years instead of 6 months. I would just point out that if the Board of Contract Appeals has not made a decision at the end of 6 months, in many instances, what we do is we bring this back to the board to say we're going to extend it for another 6 months, another year. And I think what the Secretary is saying, he selected 6 months. If they have not made a decision by that point in time, we have the option before that contract expires to bring it back to the board.
And that's great for working conditions, legal aid and other providers. That really just gives them a real boost in their morale. I'm appalled at this, frankly. Well-intentioned, perhaps, but appalling.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And take emergency action. You need another month to sort this out, or 6 months, or whatever it is. Come back and give it to us. We'll apply. We've applied many things retroactively. Lots of things.
I think let's take a 10-minute break.
How do you get him to do it?
You've taken a short bio break, and we return now to item 7S and 17S. Well, when last we were here, we were somewhat stuck.
I have a new motion.
A new motion. Yes, Mr. Comptroller.
First, I want to apologize to Marion for. This is now the 41st year of our service. But, Governor and Madam Treasurer, I would like to substitute a motion that would say both 7 and 17 should be remanded back to the agency with a suggestion from the board that the option for the kids be exercised if they so think that's wise, and that whatever they wish to do with the contract for the adults to assure continuity, we would be favorably disposed to, if necessary, retroactively approve continuity of service for that item. And that's something that I would, hopefully in that extension, they would be able to do a task force or a council meeting or something appropriate that would, make sure everybody is on board as far as the protection of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that would hurt anything. I'd be happy to make that motion.
All right, that motion's out there. My motion would be that we approve the matters that are submitted to this board and allow the appeals process at the Board of Contract Appeals
to run its course. Given the reduction in the number of Senate cases, I don't think anyone's going to be happy ultimately at the outcome of these things. And we had a procurement process that was put forward. The rules were there. People bid. People competed. And then now we're at the a juncture where some don't like the outcome of it. In the past, we always had the six. Too often we would wait until the Board of Contract Appeals ruled and then revisit the matter after that and be guided accordingly. So that's what I would hope that we would do. Madam Treasurer, what do you think?
So I would support the Comptroller's proposal only rather than saying the Secretary should look at the procurement system, however you put it. I think there should be a separate group and suggest that it be the group that the governor set up already under Ms. Childs, I guess, or chaired by Ms. Childs, looking at the procurement of social services, to look at this procurement process and report back
on all of this
to us. I understand what you're saying about the Board of Contract Appeals. I have every reason to think that the Secretary and the evaluation group did appropriate things. Don't question that.
Well, with the change,
and I think, but nonetheless, with that slight change, I would second.
I'm happy to agree to that change. And
what's the slight change?
That there not be an agency review, right, but there be some third party review, either the council that Mary Jo is chair of, or the task force
that
someone is, anybody, some independent group. I take it is what the treasurer was.
What's the name of the group, Ms. Charles?
Yes, sir. It's the Council for the Procurement of Health, Education, and Social Services. It was created by the legislature.
Right, right. Looking at the method by which we procure these services, not looking at this procurement.
So where does that leave DHR? So if there's no, so that means that there's not the votes to support the awarding of these contracts. So.
Yes, sir. If the deferral was voted on, then the department would have to come up with a alternative way to procure these services, or come back again in September again for a reconsideration. But they would basically have to figure out a procurement way to keep things going, either sole source, emergency, whatever methodology is available under current procurement law to keep the services going.
Yes, my motion is to remand both of these items back to the agency with a suggestion that A, they keep continuity of service, either through exercising an option, whatever they want to do, or if they want us to retroactively approve a continuity for the adults. And then secondly, that there be a review by your council, I take it there are legislators on that,
yes,
of this procurement process as it applies to representing children and representing very vulnerable adults. And that there, I would just a suggestion on them, that the extension be long enough that there can be a review. I would press a motion. It may not be perfect, but it's.
I've never heard of us remanding something.
It would be considered a deferral, sir.
Uh huh. So it sounds like and I made my motion. My motion failed for lack of a second. So the comptroller makes his motion. The treasurer seconds that. And this matter is deferred, indefinitely?
Yes, sir, until the whatever actions the department would take would probably require Board of Public Works approval, be it a exercise of an option if one is available, emergency procurement, whatever solution they come
up with. One is available.
I don't know. The department would have to answer what's available. I'm not sure what options are available.
Can I just interject one method
about abortion? Yeah, I think they wanted the whole thing deferred. And then...
repeat what you said about the adults.
Yes, I think that's a good
that
idea.
That the alternative would be to come back with an extension of the adults or the option of the adults for retroactive approval.
Yes.
I am troubled by the fact that the adult con services and the CINA TPR services came together in one item. Anyhow, I don't think it should.
Madam Budget Director wants to be heard.
My question was just in regard to, I heard the Secretary said that the adult portion expires on August 31st. My question is, could that be pulled out separately and dealt with?
I think it is within the Board's discretion to separate out 7S because it is distinguished in the agenda item which contracts are adult and which ones are CINA. It's certainly up to the Board to do that, or alternatively, the Department could do some sort of bridge contract to keep the services going and then bring that back to the Board at its next meeting.
Well, I think we're giving suggestions. We're not trying to run roughshod over the procurement process. I think it's best if this review and these existing services are extended adequately for the review, and then we don't have to be concerned that something's being changed if we had known about the negative impact, we wouldn't have been in favor of it. We can continue as is until there's a review and the agency can make the recommendations to us so that they, they're the experts. They can make the resolutions without us dictating to them. I'm just saying
this. Oh, we are dictating to them. I mean, you vote, you had them do a procurement process. They've done it. They've done a better job of taking care of vulnerable kids. People don't like it because there's fewer cases. And then you tell them at the end of the procurement process, you don't like the way the procurement process came out. So that's what you all voted to do. So you're deferring it for 2 years so they can come back and, I guess, steer it in such a way that legal aid gets it. I don't know.
I think at the very least, I think there's the contracts for adult services. I believe the board has said that it's within your discretion to award the cases for adult services.
Can we separate out a motion that's already before us to do that?
The board can make a motion to separate out 7S to approve the adult legal representation because it is separated out in the agenda item, and the CINA contracts would remain deferred.
All right, so we're going back now. The treasurer's moving to reconsider the last vote with regard to item 7S. And now the treasurer, and that's seconded by the comptroller, I assume.
No.
Okay, seconded by the governor. And now we're back on 7S. Treasurer moves that we approve 7S. Except for the CINA matters.
Correct.
Okay. So that, moves to approval of 7S without the CINA matters. Governor seconds. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. Comptroller opposes that motion. That motion carries. We're now on 7S, I think.
17S.
Right? Did we just pass 7S? Yes?
7S.
Okay. All right. And so now we're on 17, and 17, the comptroller renews his motion to defer. Indefinitely and to remand back to DHR for a process that everyone will be happy with at the end of which and agree to. And that motion is seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? No. No. Governor votes no. That concludes this meeting of the Board of Public Works.